The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you, and also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It is raining outside, and there's some traffic issues heading on to the Spillway from Kenner, heading out to Laplace. Different accidents, so be aware of that. Highs of 68 today, about a 70% chance for showers today and tomorrow. Then a front comes through. Lows in the 50s to 60s for the next couple of days. Highs in the lower 70s. So that'll be a nice respite. Kind of fall-ish, not quite fall-like. And then we're back to the 80s by the weekend. No real cold Arctic blast, jacket weather, anything like that coming. But be careful today, and remember, you got to have... Obviously, I hope you got the lights on now because it's still dark, but if your windshield wipers are on, by state law, you're supposed to have your headlights on as well. David Schultz joins us now, professor of political science at Hamline University. Good morning, David. How are you?
I am doing well, and I hope you're well, too.
I am. You know, it's funny how politics makes for strange bedfellows, because if you had given me a crystal ball back in the day of the debates in 2016, I guess it was, with Donald Trump and little Marco Rubio and hand size and all of this foolishness that was going on, to think that, okay, let's fast forward, 2024, Donald Trump's going to name Marco Rubio to be Secretary of State. I don't think I'd have seen that coming. You?
I didn't either. When I saw the headline yesterday, I wiped my glasses off and reread it and said, am I reading this correctly or something like that? I mean, I did not see that coming whatsoever. I'm looking at some of his other appointments. Yeah, I could see Elise Stefanik for a couple of things.
Sure.
But Marco Rubio, completely out of the ballpark in terms of something that I would have seen.
Talk about Kristi Noem as Director of Homeland Security. I can see that, because these are all Trump loyalists, and we all know that the president-elect favors, I think it's fair to say, loyalty above all else. Accurate?
I think it's very accurate that which also explains why Nikki Haley, at least for now, I think, isn't going to be in his administration, because she made the big mistake of challenging him during the primary. But I could still see a scenario where he picks her for something. But I think you're right. Basically, loyalty over all us.
Let's talk about the picks that the president-elect has made so far, at least the things he's indicating. And I guess first, David, let's take a step back and talk about a president, any president, picking their cabinet and who has say over that, or given the party in control and all that stuff.
Well, first off, remember that the people who are in the cabinet do have to be confirmed by the Senate. I mean, the Constitution requires senior level people to be appointed. There's a process for that. But generally, before we get to the formality issue here, it's usually presidents are going to pick people who appease particular constituencies or interest groups, you know. And so if, for example, you know, you're indebted to, I don't know, Silicon Valley, or you're indebted to, I don't know, let's say if you're a Democrat, the educational establishment, you pick people, you know, who sort of both align with your ideology and at the same time align with the pressure from particular interest groups. Trump is sort of doing that, I think, right now, too, in terms of picking people who are loyal and seem to be aligning with where he seems to want to be on a variety of issues.
And this is not just with President-elect Trump. This is any president. During the whole campaign process, sometimes cabinet positions are kind of it's understood that if you give me your support, you'll get this?
Exactly. This is the, you know, what's that phrase they use? Quid pro quo. Yeah. You do this for me, I'll do that for you. This is kind of the quid pro quo. So even though you technically can't like bribe somebody or pay somebody or give them something of value, you know, to endorse your campaign, you can sort of implicitly do that and say, listen, Bobby Kennedy Jr., endorse me, and there might very well be a position in my cabinet for you. Or they don't even have to go that far and actually say that. It's just kind of what understood.
Who is Trump's former Secretary of State? That surprised me. Mike Pompeo?
It was Pompeo was, I think, the last one. The first one, God, what was his name now? He was the person... Oh, my God. He was the now I'm blanking on it. Wasn't he the oil person?
Rex Tillerson.
Because he lasted, what, about not even a year or something like that, if I remember correctly. And Pompeo was eventually the Secretary of State. It was his chief of staff that he went through a pile of those.
But Pompeo did he do anything that Trump could have portrayed as disloyal or interpreted as disloyal?
He has been, let's say, not 100% loyal. And I think Trump generally is a, you know, 100% or nothing person here. And I think Pompeo in the last few weeks made a few critical comments about Trump. I just can't remember what they were off the top of my head. But certainly he wants a circle of people even more loyal than he had the first time.
Let's talk about cabinet positions and influence and how, to me, I see some people getting spun up about this or about that, but you don't have to be a cabinet official to have an influence on Donald Trump or any president. All you have to do is have his or her ear, right?
That's absolutely correct there, that many presidents throughout time have had, you know, the informal advisors who they turn to, who are not part of the cabinet. Maybe they're just considered what, presidential advisors, and have lots of influence. I mean, we could go so far as to say that for many presidents, certainly not all of them, many presidents, their most important unofficial advisor has been their wife. I mean, we know going back over time, you know, whether it's the Roosevelts or, you know, Obama, so forth like that. I'm just trying to think of a variety of places here.
Reagan.
I was going to say Nancy Reagan. I was just blanking. Nancy Reagan. They've had important observations or comments. I mean, the second George Bush, and the first George Bush, both their wives seem to have had some influence. And it's not to be surprised. You know, not a surprise there that for most of us, you know, who are married, we oftentimes discuss, you know, certain things and bounce them off of our partners. And we've developed those relationships. We have friends that we talk to. So in our private life, we have all types of informal connections. And what would surprise us, or why should we be surprised, that the president wouldn't have a bunch of informal connections or people that person trusts?
But that being said, as far as we know, Melania Trump has not really involved herself in politics, or has she? What do we know?
It does not look like it at this point that she, you know, unless I missed something during the campaign, I don't think she was out campaigning for him at all. Now, somebody wants to like, call in or text in and say, yeah, she was here such and such. But I don't recall her being out there in the same way that, for example, Harris's husband was out there campaigning, or even J.D. Vance's wife, I think, was out there a little bit like stumping for her husband. And in the past, we oftentimes do see the president's, president's wives are out there campaigning. But I think she has been singularly quiet. Again, if somebody remembers something out there, but I don't remember anything. Do you?
No, but that being said, I guess, you know, you never know what goes on in a residence between a couple. Who knows what's doing what? I was just curious about that. We'll take a break, pick it up. We come back. Yeah. David Schultz, our guest, professor of political science at Hamline University, talking about what President-elect Trump's cabinet could look like. 621 Traffic Now, WWI.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh. 6:26 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, also a professor of law. David, you know, I was wondering, what happened to Ivanka and who's her husband?
Jared Kushner.
Jared Kushner, where have they been? I have not really seen them on a campaign. Have you?
I did not either, and I think I saw a piece the other day that indicated that Jared Kushner has said he's not interested in any position in the Trump administration whatsoever. And I think he's just going to go off and him and his wife go off and make a bunch of money.
Because they were influential in the first Trump presidency, were they not?
Oh, they were tremendously. Jared was the one who designed the Trump's Middle East plan, mm-hmm. for a peace plan that went absolutely nowhere. But yeah, they were tremendously involved. I would swear that at least once a week in the news, we heard something about them.
So for people that are concerned, and I'm watching the TVs in here, one of them is talking about liberal, what did it say just now on Fox News, something about meltdowns or something along those lines. You are a professor of law as well. For people that are just apoplectic about the results of the election, explain to them, if you will, please, how, you know, that there are constitutional guardrails in effect. Despite what was said during the campaign about this or about that or the other thing, that we do have a constitution in this country and there are institutions, even though Trump won popular vote and he won electoral landslide, that there are other people in the country and that it doesn't have to be all one way for those people that are worried about that, is what I'm trying to say.
Sure. So remember, first off, when he got elected, you know, 8 years ago in 2016, he had a trifecta. He had control of the House and the Senate, and he certainly didn't get everything he wanted back then. And that's important to understand because we do have these basic things called checks and balances, separation of powers, federalism, a whole bunch of things. The Constitution requires that Congress pass bills, have to be signed by the president into law, that there's limits on what presidents can do in terms of executive orders. And I just mention all of that because, right, during the hysteria of the campaign, you know, he probably engaged in a lot of exaggerations. And it wouldn't be the first candidate to do that. And people were all kinds of fears at the end of the day that, yes, we do have a constitution, that, yes, the Senate is going to be required to confirm his nominations to the courts, to the cabinet, and so forth like that. But, yes, we saw from his first term that when he tried to change a bunch of executive orders, the court struck it down. The Constitution, as far as I know, still exists.
So real quick, I wonder about the political calculus as far as Donald Trump goes, because he always was this giant, larger-than-life figure, right? Well, he won, so now, is he still the kingmaker, or is it a wide-open field, and do people really have to, like the Nikki Haley's of the world, do they pause for a minute before challenging him and positioning? Because let's face it, the election has already begun for 2028, has it not?
It has, and he's a lame duck already. Remember, he's not even in office yet. He's going to go to a second term. The Constitution prevents him from running for a third term, so he faces the problem of being a lame duck right off the bat. And That means on one level, he's got a lot of power because he's starting off in a new term. But on the other level, it means they don't have to fear retribution because he's going to be out of office in 4 years.
That's what I was wondering. And he's also going to be 78, 82 years old, I guess, by then. Thank you, David. I appreciate the time. I'm just trying to give everybody a voice in this nation because everybody does have a voice. At 6:30, we'll talk about manufacturing in the United States when we come back. Right now, time for WWL First News. Get back, Loretta. 6:47, 13 till 7. Tim Zimmer bringing us back. Tim's under the weather today. Not feeling well at all. Coming back from vacation. I don't know what he did, but he got himself sick. So rain today and then rain tomorrow. I've not seen anything from the city about neutral ground parking, although they usually do that after it's too late. 70% chance for showers today and tomorrow. Then it clears out, cools off a little bit. Highs only in the 70s. After Thursday, Willie Shee joins us now, professor of management practice at Harvard Business School. Talk about manufacturing returning to the United States. How you doing, professor?
Oh, good. How are you today, Tommy?
I'm okay, sir. Somebody texted in. I asked them about buying American. They said, I'm a mechanic. I still try to buy as many tools made in USA as I can. Channel Lock, Matthew Chisels, of course, Snap-on, but they're so high-priced. First of all, how easy is it to determine what is an American product these days?
Well, Tommy, it is getting more difficult because what you see is the import of a lot of partially finished or, you know, kind of intermediate goods things. There's a lot of stuff coming out of Mexico, for example. And, you know, I do the same thing. I try to buy American-made tools, but they are more expensive because, you know, costs are higher in the U.S. So it's kind of a mixed bag. It's tough these days, though.
When it comes to a consumer determining what's completely made in America, is there a way to do that, Professor?
Well, usually what you do is you look at the label on the box, and that will tell you there are sort of kind of import content rules. In order to be made in the U.S., you have to have a certain amount of its value added in the U.S. But, you know, in reality, a lot of parts and subcomponents, like you can have a car that is assembled in the U.S., but a lot of the parts are going to come from Mexico or China or Japan or all over the world, as a matter of fact. It might still be a made-in-the-U.S. car, but, you know, a lot of the subsystems have come from elsewhere.
So what can the new Trump administration do? Because I think we all would like it to be, well, not everybody, because of some of the social implications. But when it comes to manufacturing, you know, go back to the 40s or the 50s where you had the steel plants and churning out this and that and manufacturing that. And everything was bought in America, sold in America. God bless the USA, all that. But how likely is something like that to happen?
Well, I think it's tough. I think there are certain things that we will be able to make in the U.S. In fact, we continue to make in the U.S. Those tend to be high value-added products that have, you know, frankly, a little lower labor content, or the labor content is not a big part of the final cost. I always cite jet aircraft engines as a great example. Those are very high-value manufactured products. They're made in the U.S., The U.S. is a world leader in that area. And, you know, while there is substantial labor cost, it is not a dominant part of the product. Now, you go to the $29.95 blender that you find at your local Walmart, okay, and there's a lot of labor cost in that. Those aren't going to be made in the U.S. anytime in the foreseeable future, in my book.
And for people that want to buy American, I don't know if there is an option or not, but we were having this discussion last week. I don't know if it was with you, Professor. It's been a long couple of weeks, but about you can do it, but the labor, if you want to buy a product that is, say, labor intensive and it was made in the United States, you can do it now. But let's say clothing, for example. You're not going to get the price that you are on a jacket made in Vietnam or the Pacific Rim, correct?
That's right. You can buy, let's talk about shoes, for example. You can buy American-made athletic shoes. New Balance has a factory up here in Massachusetts that I visited a couple of years ago. But those shoes are more expensive, and they are usually made kind of custom for professional athletes because they're, you know, the labor cost is high, but, you know, people are willing to pay. If you want a low-cost jacket, you know, it's going to be hard to beat bringing it in from Bangladesh or Vietnam or Indonesia or somewhere like that, just because labor costs are such a substantial part of the overall cost of the product. It's just hard to beat when the U.S. costs 20, 30 times as much as doing something in the Far East.
Where do robotics fit in all of this? I was watching 60 Minutes the other night. A promo came on, and they were carving a statue with a robot. And I'm just wondering, as we talk about labor costs and advances, would robotics help in the United States manufacturing effort or not? But if it does, it's not going to lead to more manufacturing jobs, right, because it's robots that are doing it? Tell me about
that. That's right. That's right. I mean, robots, if you go in most factories, what people will do is they'll use robots to replace labor on simple tasks. Okay, so for example, stacking boxes on a pallet. Most manufacturers are automating that with robots. And, you know, it's kind of back-breaking work in the first place, so you kind of like a robot to do that for you. Okay, but yes, it does replace those kind of simpler jobs, and it's all part of increasing productivity in manufacturing so you can be cost competitive with a higher cost labor force. Okay, so that's kind of the dilemma we face. You know, we need more and more productivity, but that means the jobs have to change.
So when it comes to clothing manufacturing, I'm just curious, they can't roboticize, and I just made that word up, Professor. Please feel free to claim it as your very own. They can't roboticize that? They can't have robots manufacture clothing?
Well, clothing is a tough one because it's, you know, and it's kind of common sense when you think about it, but it's a soft material. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what happens is when you try to handle it, it moves around, and that's very hard for robots to do these days, you know, because what you want is you want kind of hard materials that don't shift and you can do things in a very repeatable way. Soft materials have always been very hard to automate. Now, there is some level of automation when you think about basic sewing machines, okay, or machines that, you know, cut a whole stack of fabric and so on. But there's still, you know, guiding the fabric into the machine and so on. That's something that's very hard to automate. People are working on it, and they've been working on it for years, but it is a tough one.
As you say, that made me think of the old joke, traveling more than a cheap suit. Thank you, Professor. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having
me,
Tom.
Have a good day. All right, Professor Willie Shih, Professor of Management Practice at Harvard Business School, 655, 5 till 7, rainy Tuesday morning. Let's look at traffic on WWL.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at newbalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.